Somebody's going to go bridge here. It's matter time.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Gone Bridge Podcast, episode 148. My name is Andrew Gardner, joined alongside by Alex Clausen. Clausen, how are we doing today?
Nice, calm Sunday recording, 148, two away from a big one. Got to think we've had something up our sleeve for that, don't we?
I would think so. We've been teasing that for a little bit.
A little bit.
Yeah, how are we doing? You got a little anecdote to start us off? We're Sunday night here. On the eve of going back to work, 5 days, on the grind. I'd love to hear you got something
for
us.
I have an anecdote. Look, I forgot how humbling the stock market is. Picked my hobby back up of investing, and I was doing pretty well. I was up a couple hundred bucks by lunch on Friday, and I opened my little investment account right after four, right after the market closes. I'm down over $100.
There you go.
Yep.
Nice. Nice.
Somehow managed to lose a couple hundred bucks in 4 hours.
The stock market giveth and the stock market taketh away.
And it surely taketh away Friday.
Taketh. Yeah, you gotta pull out. Let me phrase that before. You gotta get your money out of there while you can, I guess, if you're up.
Yeah. It's a long game. You just kinda gotta ride the wave.
Yeah. Gotta ride it. Yeah, we're back here, two episodes away from 150. What are we, 6 weeks away now from opening day? Where do the Sox play opening day this year? I know it's on the road. Is it Baltimore?
Like Seattle.
Oh, that's right. They're out west again. That worked out really well the last time. Back in, what was that, 2019? They had like that 11-game heater on the road. You're right. It is Seattle. They got a four-game road trip. I got to say, my excitement for the season is starting to kick up now that we're post-Super Bowl. I know you don't like it, but we are post-truck day. Players have reported. We've got Cora press conferences. We got guys talking. We got pitchers and catchers throwing. And we're 11 days. Oh, yeah, there's a leap year this year. 12 days away. From March and getting some games going. But I feel like, again, well, we got some stuff to talk about this week. But I think really is that, spring is coming along nicely. And before we know it, it's going to be opening day.
And you know what? We're 5 days away from arguably the biggest baseball game that the Red Sox will play in 2024. Friday the 23rd against the Northeastern Huskies.
Let's go. I'm rooting for the team. I want to see the Huskies pull an upset.
I'm always rooting for the Huskies.
You got to root for the Huskies.
You just love an underdog. And like literally a dog.
Literally. Dog. Sox. Nesson.
I think Northeast. I'll be watching.
I got to figure out my whole Nesson thing here. It gets sticky when you're like in. Like, now that I live in Boston, I'm in the blackout zone, like directly in it. So like the last couple of years have had MLB TV. I'm not going to get that this year, but then it's like, I'm not going to purchase a cable package. Can I purchase like just a Nesson? Like, I don't even know. I got to look into this. This is why they got to streamline this somehow. This is ridiculous.
No free ads. I do believe that Nesson 360.
Oh yeah.
Live coverage of over 200 plus Red Sox and Bruins games.
Okay.
Pre and post game coverage.
All right.
Your first month for just $1 and nice. Start streaming live.
What is the second month run me though? Like 300?
$29.99.
Oh, that's actually not terrible.
Could do $330 annually.
Oh, yeah. I don't think I'll be doing that because I'm not a Bruins fan, but I will probably be getting that and also frequenting Fenway Park this year.
I mean, you have to.
I got it. You got it. I think I'm trying to map out what the first game I'll be at is. And have you been getting emails left and right from the ticket office too?
Oh yeah.
About buying stuff. I actually caved for one of their deals this past week. And it was the Valentine's Day one. It was like the two tickets, $49. You get a hot dog and a soft drink. I feel like it's not too bad of a deal. I'm sitting like right field, the deck up there, like Sam Adams' deck.
It's like the best place to watch.
I know. I'm pretty pumped. It's also, now that I'm looking at it, it's the April the 13th against the Angels, Harry Potter Day.
I was just looking at it. You're one day ahead of Bayo City Connect Bobblehead Day.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I might go to the game on Friday as well. But I think realistically the first game I get to will probably be one of the two against the Orioles, either the Wednesday or the Thursday.
The Thursday one, that's a great way to finish your week.
You better believe so. I'm just
Hop out of the
like,
office, run to the Sox.
you better believe it. You better believe it. That is going to be a busy week though. Last couple days until the April 15th deadline, if you know, you know. But yeah, I mean, in terms of the Sox, I'm just ready for some game action. We did have a trade this week. Jon Schreiber dealt to the Kansas City Royals. He was traded for one of the Royals, I guess you can, in quotes, top prospects, their 19th ranked prospect, David Sandlin. He's a relief pitcher. He is 22 years old. I'm going to turn 23 actually in a couple days here. And last year with the Royals, he was up on their single A team, 3.38 ERA in 12 starts, 58 innings. And had a whip of 1.19, K per nine of 12.1. So he can strike guys out. Interesting move. I want to hear your thoughts on it.
Yeah, it really doesn't make sense to me at all. Schreiber has been such a good piece for this pen for a while, and he's in through contract up until 2026. So you have the next 2 years of him. He's making like $1.1 million, so he's not expensive. So when you look down the row and you say, all right, is he expensive? No. Is he bad? No. They need a lefty reliever, but you could get rid of other guys instead of that. So I guess that is some sort of rationale. And do you get anything back in return that is of equal value or will provide you immediate impact? Jury's still out on the first one, but we're not going to see this guy for another
Probably,
2 years,
I was
3 years.
going to say earliest next year.
He's still in high A.
Yeah, I would think he'll be pitching for probably Salem this year, if I had to guess.
You'd think, maybe make it up to Portland by the time the summer hits.
Yep.
But other than that,
Yeah.
it's a puzzler to me.
I'm just confused how. I will say that, like, I don't know. Originally, when this trade happened, I was, I think, shell shock value, like, or I guess the face value of it is the Red Sox trade one of their better relievers for a prospect. When, again, it's like you don't have a ton of quote unquote outstanding major league talent right now. I mean, I guess you can't really group Jon Schreiber in as like, being top of the top, but honestly, I think I look at the bullpen, and the only way I can, not only way, but the way I think I kind of justified in my head is that the bullpen is one of, if not like the deeper parts, probably the best part of the team, and so I think it's an interesting deal. I mean, Schreiber in 2022 kind of came out of nowhere. And in 64 games, like there was he could have made the All-Star team. He had a 2.22 ERA, and last year I know he was hurt for a little bit. Still had a pretty decent year again. Like his K per nine was over 10 again. Walks were a little bit up though. I think that was one thing that last year he certainly struggled with. He was walking almost five guys per nine innings. But I guess the thing for me is like you get a decent prospect who. Was let me see. I think he was an 11th round pick in the 2022 draft. Again, not like a top guy, a guy who could maybe come up next year in 2025 and make some impact. But again, it's like I guess if you're trading Schreiber, I would like to have seen if you can get a guy of similar value, maybe a guy who's done this in Triple A or Double A and is 2 months from being ready to come up and contribute to the team because, yeah, like this is a good piece. He's a top 30 prospect for a reason. Like I've seen reading about him, it looks like his swing and miss stuff is kind of the best part of what he has. But again, it's like you're giving up talent, and in my head, I think that another reason Brezel might have done this is just because the Red Sox kind of have a logjam in the bullpen. I mean, looking at the 40-man roster, you could really make a case for most of these guys. I don't know if that's a good or a bad thing, but most of these guys for having some sort of role in the bullpen. And obviously there's only so many spots. So I think maybe that's kind of Breslow's thinking is like, but again, you made a good point. He's not getting paid a lot. They had him under control for like 2 or 3 more years. So it's a deal for sure. I don't think it's going to be a highly impactful one either way. I still like what the Red Sox have in the bullpen, but with the talks of like Kenley Jansen maybe getting dealt too, you're just kind of like, I think if you're going to trade Kenley Jansen in that scenario, you still want to have John Schreiber as a guy who has shown that he can show some flashes to close, because he had 8 saves in 2022.
Yeah, and if you get rid of Kenley, then you really have to put the entire brunt of the closing on a guy like Chris Martin.
And I think Houck would probably be the guy, honestly.
Either one. And I think at some level, you do risk putting a guy in at closer who usually isn't used to closing. You put a lot of extra pressure on him. And some guys do great. Some guys transition to closer very well. Some guys don't. So where Martin was kind of the guy where they could go on in a leverage situation, but not in a closing situation, he really thrived. But I wonder, I mean, the jury's out on who closes at that point, but I think to some level you risk damaging the success of Chris Martin.
Yeah, and I mean, there's even been talk of Chris Martin getting dealt before the season too. And I mean, it's weird that we're, again, a couple weeks from the season starting, and there's still active trade talks of, will the Red Sox trade their closer, trade their starting center fielder, who they already mentioned will be their leadoff hitter in Jaren Duran if he's healthy, and then also trading a guy who was arguably a top 10 reliever in baseball last year and one of the best setup mitts. It's just a very weird situation. I saw people on Twitter saying like, oh, Sox are just trying to cut salary again, like saving another million. I really don't think it's that. You know, I was just going to say, I really don't think it's that. I think it's more of a personnel thing where the bullpen's pretty full. And again, maybe Schreiber's just kind of like the odd man out. I probably would have gone a different direction if I was Craig Breslow. But I'm trying to look at this positively, where I would like to think this is logical. If they traded John Schreiber, who was one of the more like leading candidates in my mind, at least, I could be wrong here, but I feel like this is not a hot take, would have been one of the leading candidates to be the closer had Kenley gotten traded.
No doubt.
In my head, maybe this means that they're keeping Kenley, which would be great, because we've seen the 2022 season, what happens when there is not a closer or a guy with much experience, and you have like 10 or 11, 10 or 11 guys who register one and no one even gets to double digits. So it's definitely interesting. Makes you think a little bit, like, why was this done? This was not like one of those trades where it's black and white. You're trying to rebuild or you're trying to get better. This is kind of one of those deals where you're like, we got to dig into this a little bit more to see why the Red Sox made this deal.
I don't think we've heard from Alex Cora on it, and he's not going to come out and say, you know, this sucks and this and that, and, you know, Craig Breslow doesn't do his job well, and he's screwed.
Could you imagine if he did that over the John Schreiber trade?
That would be not the thing to lose his mind over. But
I would hope not.
No, definitely not. There's definitely been worse moves that he could have blown his lid on. But it seems like, I mean, this just makes it much more difficult for Alex Cora to do his job.
See, I don't completely
and Cora,
agree.
Like, Cora's not great at managing the bullpen in the beginning.
I don't completely
agree. He makes plenty of questionable decisions.
Yeah, I mean, I don't completely agree with that. I really am still holding out hope that the Red Sox can sign another starting pitcher, because, again, the rotation's pretty thin. It's Bayo. It's Giolito. It is probably Cutter Crawford. And, you know, then maybe Winkowski or Whitlock or Pavetta and, you know, Hauk. Like, there's a whole bunch of guys who are like, you know, still question marks. Like, we're into year four of like, is Garrett Whitlock a starter? Is Tanner Hauk a starter? Like, we should
No.
have. I don't think Tanner Hauk is. I was actually just looking at his numbers here. Like, I forgot how bad. Like, he didn't pitch a game out of the bullpen last year. But besides the point, when you go down like the bullpen options, again, if you move like two of those guys back and you have like Whitlock and Hauk in the bullpen, you have a guy like, again, I think the lefties, they could definitely use another lefty in the bullpen. Your lefty options right now are Bernardino, who had a pretty decent year last year, Joe Jacques, Chris Murphy, and Brandon Walter. So not great. I know Chris Murphy, I'm expecting him to make the opening day roster, and he was pretty solid last year, but still, years of the past, I feel like the Red Sox have always had like a more lockdown left-handed guy in the bullpen.
No doubt.
Even a Craig Breslow when they won the World Series. Like, he was
That's right.
kind of him and Matt Thornton in 2013. But like, you go down this list and you know, there's some interesting guys like Zach Kelly, who got hurt in the first half of last year. It'd be interesting to how like see how he bounces back. The guy Isaiah Campbell, who they got from the Mariners earlier this year, like I think he could have a pretty big role in the pen. And then my big like star question mark, like I'm excited to see where this is going to kind of lead, is Brian Mata this year, because if he doesn't make the opening day roster, then I'm pretty sure he's out of options. So there's a pretty good shot that if he has a decent spring, he'll make the roster. And I'm just excited to see him. I know he's kind of tailed off the last couple of years with injuries and performance, but this is a guy we've been hearing about for a long time. So I don't know. I'm a little excited that he could be in the running this year to make you know, pitch some innings.
I mean, at this point, there's now an open spot in the bullpen, right? And he seems to kind of be the next guy up. So unless they sign someone, and I'm looking at the free agent list, it's not great. I mean, when you look at the best lefties, we're talking about Drew Pomeranz.
I don't think
And
he's pitched in like 3 years.
no. But other than that, I mean, Liam Hendricks, David Robertson, Matt Barnes,
Yeah. I mean,
Mark
Hendricks and
Melanson.
Barnes are both coming off surgery.
I mean,
Robertson,
no
yeah.
one that seems they'd probably be cheap.
All three guys righties as well.
Right. And other than that, it just kind of drops off from there.
Who's like the top lefty free agent besides Jordan Montgomery? Or Blake Snell?
Rich Hill?
Yeah, honestly.
Oh no. Urías, who's not gonna get signed?
There any lefty relievers?
The two that came up were, where are they? Drew Pomeranz and Aaron Loop.
Loop's not bad.
Loop,
Well, he's
whatever.
not great. He's older.
He is old. But other, I mean, once you get past those guys, Brad Hand, Joey Rodriguez, Taylor
Joey,
Hearn.
was that last year? Yeah, it was last year's on the team.
Yep.
Yeah, Loop is 36. Joey Rodriguez was horrible last year. Brad Hand is also older, but he's had some good years. He's how old is he now? He's 30, almost 34. But yeah, he's bounced around the last couple of years and has not been as good. But yeah, I mean, again, it's still just bizarre to me how many good players, with spring training now having started, how many good players are still out there. And like, again, there have been no rumors, no like stirrings. I think the biggest thing that's happened this week is, in terms of like Montgomery, is that the Rangers basically said like they don't have the money to bring him back. And there was some talk about maybe the Phillies being in contact with him. Sounds like it's going to come down to either the Phillies or the Red Sox. And if I had to guess, he'll go to the Phillies for a 1 or 2 year deal. It's just, again, Montgomery would supplement this rotation well. And I can't think of a guy who's like been more of a better fit in a part of the team the Red Sox are kind of struggling with, and has essentially just been like, please just give me an offer. Like, I'll sign. It makes so much sense. I just do not get the hesitation.
Yeah, I mean, you just said it. You kind of have the perfect idea just falling into your lap, a lefty starter. who just came off of a World Series, who's going to be productive, who's going to provide a little bit of diversity in your rotation so that you don't have five righties going out there. And he wants to be here. Yet they won't sign him. It doesn't make sense to me.
The most of the offseason just hasn't. Bottom line is that it just really hasn't. So again, why is Cody Bellinger still a free agent? Why is Blake Snell still a free agent? I mean,
he's definitely just chilling.
He's probably just chilling. You're right.
Do you think he knows he hasn't signed yet?
I think we talked about this last week. Like, probably not. Probably not, if I had to guess.
It's going to be like the Jamal Adams video on Hard Knocks when he tries to go back to the Cubs facility and the door's locked.
Yeah, he's like, oh, must have changed the password on me. Yeah, I don't know, man. Tomorrow. It's just it's an interesting time of year. And again, I think the team is, I think other than maybe another pitcher or two, I think the team is pretty set with how we're going to see it come opening day, which you look up and down, it's an interesting team. I don't know. I'm excited to see how it goes. I'm excited. Like, there are some players, younger players this year who I think could break through and maybe carve out a pretty big role on the team. Like, they've said that Rafael, if he makes the opening day roster, he will be the team's starting center fielder. I guess Durant, what would Durant play then? I guess left? Or would he play right?
I'd probably say right.
And then O'Neal and left. Sorry, so then I misspoke earlier about trading your center fielder. I meant right fielder. But like, I think the outfield picture is very interesting. I'm kind of happy that they parted ways with Verdugo. Like, you've got six guys who, I mean, Ref Snyder's kind of a bench guy, but you've got guys who can play out there. And it sounds like Yoshida will be the DH. And then, like, again, there are a lot of storylines this year. Like Trevor Story, I'm curious to see what's going to go on with him. I'm excited to see what Casas and Devers do. Obviously, like, will Bobby Dalbec make the team? It's going to be an interesting year, and we'll see how it goes. Again, I try to stay as optimistic as possible. Like, I'm really excited to see Grissom play everyday role. He's probably the guy I'm most excited to see. But yeah, I mean, would just love to see one more starter, and then let's roll the dice. Let's see how this season goes.
Yeah, I mean, I was gonna say, I think Grissom's probably the one guy that I'm most intrigued to watch.
Mm-hmm.
Story kind of in the same boat where we just haven't seen a ton of them. You know, Grissom especially, like, I think that there's a good chance that the guy has a good year, especially at the plate. I don't know that he's great on defense, but I think having a defensive partner up the middle will make it better. And I think this is probably the most secure that middle of the infield has been in kind of a long time.
Right, since Bogarts and Pedroia. I was just thinking that.
I was going to say, like, how often do the Red Sox have a consistent shortstop and second baseman, right?
Well, I mean, Bogarts obviously for a long time, but second base really since Pedroia left has kind of been like a you know,
revolving door.
Yeah. I mean, they had Kinsler there, they had Nunez, Holt, Arroyo for a little bit, but still not guys who you looked at from a long-term perspective and you're like, this is a guy who, you know, 10 years from now could still be the starting second baseman for the Red Sox. I really think Grissom could be that kind of player for the Red Sox, where
no doubt
we're going to see him for a long time. And like, even some of the prospects who have come up, like an Emmanuel Valdez, yeah, he's had flashes of being really good, but again, you know, really look at him as a guy who's going to be playing 150 games for the Red Sox at second base for the next, you know, 8 to 10 years. So again, I think Grissom, you know, will hopefully breathe some life into the team, breathe some life into the middle infield. And I feel like I made this point earlier in the season, but I mean, the whole infield is locked up for another 4 years. And then you move past that, like Story's 4 more years, Casas and Grissom, I believe, are 5 more years. And then Devers has 9 or 10 more years left on his deal. So it's kind of nice that it's locked up. Like, again, it's ever changing. You've got Meyer coming into the picture, maybe even at some point this year. But I think that is nice to see and kind of a change from what we've seen the last couple of years with so many players just coming in and out. In fact, I saw that I think there's only 4 players left on the team from the 2021 season. at this point. I think it's just Whitlock, Hauk, Dahlbeck, and Devers, which is crazy.
That is crazy.
I don't think there's anyone else, which means, yeah, I think those are the only four guys left.
Which sucks, because that was like one of my favorite teams. Maybe it was because they kind of came from behind, but there was a lot of personality. And I thought that the way that they, and we've talked about this a million times, but I really felt like that was the perfect Heim Bloom, Alex Cora team, because it wasn't loaded with, you know, they weren't the San Diego Padres where they were, you know, with six guys that make over 20 something million dollars. I mean, it was guys like Kyle Schwarber that were running the offense. And that guy woke up and lived and breathed getting on base. That's all he did.
Yeah. And I mean, Kike had a heck of a postseason too, like at the top of the
no
lineup.
Doubt.
And like Bobby, how many home runs did Bobby have? He had over 20 home runs that year. You still had JD on the team. You still had Bogarts. Verdugo was having a heck of a year. So like, that's a deeper team than I think most people remember. And it honestly feels like it was just yesterday, but we're talking 3 years ago now, which is insane. So again, I think a lot of people are being negative, which I can understand. And it's been a frustrating offseason. And from a perspective where, again, the team hasn't gone out and spent a ton of money. But I think when you really dig deep and analyze it, there's a lot of things to be excited about. And again, you can go into this season with a, you know, being negative, this and that, but I'm personally excited. I really truly believe that this is the best team between 2022, 2023, 2024. I don't know. 2022 on paper was a pretty decent team at the beginning of the year, but from last year, I really do in my heart believe that this is a better team than what they rolled out last year.
I think at least from the standpoint of what they're rolling out on the pitching rotation, like, I mean, you had Corey Kluber as your opening day starter. And this year, I mean, you would probably have to assume it's Bayo.
I would think either
Giolito.
Bayo or Giolito, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I'm looking at the team, like the opening day roster from last year. I mean, it's largely the same. I mean, Arroyo at second.
Duvall.
Is,
Kike.
Yeah. I mean, you know, the middle infield has gotten better. The corners are the same. And then Yoshida, Duvall, Verdugo. I think you can make a case.
I think this outfield's better.
I would say so. I mean, Duvall was so good to begin the year. And, you know, Verdugo, I think, was poised for the breakout that year. And he was great in the first half. And then he just sucked post All-Star break. And then, I mean, obviously you're missing Justin Turner. But, the utility was terrible.
I mean, in my eyes, two
Snyder, Tapia, and Yu Chang.
Yeah. Well, that's, I kind of feel like the roster's a little deeper and also a little more permanent, which I like.
Right.
Like, you knew Duvall was not, like, they were just kind of bringing in guys to fill spots. Now those spots are filled by a Vaughn Grissom in the infield and Sedan Rafaela in the outfield and a Tyler O'Neill, who I think is going to be very happy with the change of scenery and poised for a really good year with the monster. Yeah. So like, I think O'Neill is going to have a big bounce back here. And I don't know, just overall, I think the lineup, and you mentioned the utility guys from last year, the bench pieces, like definitely a much deeper team this year with like Abreu on the bench, you know, probably Ref Snyder. And then, you know, and on the infield, Valdez or Reyes, and then either Wong or McGuire. So definitely a little bit just better in that aspect.
Yeah, I think the thing that I like about O'Neill is he's so good against righties. And then you have the duality of having Ref Snyder who's so good against lefties that if you want to platoon them, then you can. Mm-hmm. And if one of them, you know, I expect that O'Neill is playing 75% of games at least in wherever they stick him in the outfield, but you have that option. If he's really struggling against lefties, or you just kind of need that lefty bat in the lineup, or that the bat in the lineup that can hit the lefties, then you can go in with Ref Snyder, and he can go in and provide a solid piece.
Totally, totally.
In replacement.
You mentioned Cora with managing the bullpen, and Cora's in his last year of the contract. It's sounding like this there's a good chance this is probably going to be his last year with the team. I'm trying to, let me just pull up. Do you have the quote, what he said the other day?
It was, have you, do you still enjoy managing the Red Sox? Do you have, plans of being here in the future? And he was kind of like, I'm focused on 2024. He really wasn't very promising. It was a no answer in terms of whether he'll be back or not.
I'm trying to find this here.
Which maybe we're reading too much into it. I don't know. But I also don't think that it's totally unlikely that based on what just happened with the Mets, how much money they gave Craig Counsell to go be their manager, that Alex Cora doesn't get another offer like that from, maybe not even the American League. But I think you can look around, like even in the American League, is it unrealistic to say that the Astros in a year go out and feel like they want to bring Cora back and they give him a big contract? Or you look out west and you have, I don't know if the Phillies or the NL rather, if you have like a team like the Phillies who maybe disappoints again, do they move on from Rob Thompson and bring in Cora? I think that there's a million options of ways it could go. You know, San Diego as well. Like they change their manager every 34 minutes.
I'm curious. I mean, I don't know. There's kind of not much to speculate on here, and it's, obviously guys aren't going to talk about contract or Cora and, this and that. So, we'll see how the season goes. I mean, if it goes well, and, I can understand if Cora is frustrated, though, about the lack of spending, and, then he kind of gets hung out to dry, because obviously he's not the one who's in charge of bringing in the guys. He's in charge of managing the players that he has. And so, obviously, if he's not feeling supported, then yeah, why would you, in any situation in life, why would you stick around in a situation where you don't feel supported? So, I mean, yeah, like, I don't know. I guess it's really just, we'll see how it goes. Like, it sucked not having him in 2020. Lots of great memories with Cora, but I can't blame him if he continues, again, I'm not behind the scenes, but I think that's a fair way to kind of guess maybe how he's feeling.
Yeah, and I think ownership would really have to. I think that would be an awful reflection on ownership if they let Cora go, because the fans like him so much, mm-hmm. and the players seem to like him so much, and he's kind of the players and the fans' manager. And if they get rid of him, I mean, who are they going to bring in? Right? It's not like there's some big, it's not the same as the NFL where there's always a new, young hot coordinator that seems primed to go into, be a head coach. Managing in baseball is, you kind of just shuffle the board. Mm-hmm. Like if you don't get a job here, you just kind of go somewhere else. And there's like, 35 managers, sometimes you bring in someone new, but most of the time you just kind of shuffle team to team.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, again, you never know who's going to have a good year, who's going to have a bad year, who's going to, have a job next year. But just thought that was something interesting. And another quick kind of note here about contracts. Today, Tristan Casas said that he wants to be a Red Sox for life. But it was also, I don't know if this came out today or yesterday. It was one of the 2 days that the Red Sox have engaged in contract extension talks with Bayo and Casas, which obviously they both turned down. And it was reported that they have not made a meaningful offering, and Casas said it was an easy one to turn down, which makes you think that that it was probably a low ball offer. So just quickly, because I feel like we're always talking about extensions, because the Sox continue to at least grow, like, bring up homegrown players who you want to keep around, i.e. Mookie, Benintendi. They got it done with Devers, but we're kind of approaching a new dawn here with a new kind of era of guys, and I'd like to keep this core around if they continue to produce. So if you've got a guy who said he says he wants to spend his entire career in Boston, he had a really good season last year in his, full first season, just please get away. I'm sure they're going to get something done, but like, just don't embarrass yourself early.
Yeah, I think they probably just have cold feet. I mean, they've had Bayo and Casas for one season. So for them to sign them to a very long-term contract after 1 year, I understand their hesitation to it. I would be shocked if we got through next offseason, if we're 365 days from now, and barring that these guys don't just absolutely blow up in a bad way. Then I would anticipate by then that they have contract offers in hand that are reasonable for a long term period of time. But I mean, it would just make absolutely no sense for the ownership group and, the GM to look at it and say, we're building for, the next crop of stars, and then to just bypass your best starting pitching prospect since Clay Buchholz and the best first baseman you've had in like genuinely a very long
Yeah,
time.
probably since like Uke. Or Adrian Gonzalez.
Yeah.
Homegrown, probably Uke.
And he was
Because
third.
after. No, he was first, and then he got moved to third when they signed Gonzalez. I'm trying to think who was in between Gonzalez. They had. Well, that was kind of a mess. They had like James Loney for a year, 23rd. They had Napoli. They had then Moreland after Napoli. Who'd they have in like 20? Oh, they had Sam or Travis Shaw there for a little bit. So yeah, I mean, again, another position where it's kind of been like a revolving door for a little while. So yeah, again, it's still so early, but I can't imagine that this next like generational young core, where again it used to be Betts and Bradley and all those guys, and they won their championship. Like this next window is gonna consist of guys coming up like Anthony and Meyer and Teal and Blyce, Blaze Jordan, Nick York, like whoever makes it up. Great, but you can't with those guys, you can't not have Casas and Bayo too. Like they're gonna be there too. So you gotta find a way to lock them up. But again, I think it is, kind of early to start to get up in arms about this. Whereas like the Devers situation was starting to get dire, and they got it done, thankfully. But two more things until we answer some questions, and we'll wrap up the show. First thing, Klaus, you already mentioned his name. Corey Kluber, 2023 opening day starter, has retired. I think a lot of people saw this coming, but it was a good, it was a great career for Corey Kluber, all things said and done.
No doubt. All very good.
Definitely, definitely.
All very good. Yeah, it's a very impressive career. I won't miss the clue ball at all. But yeah, I mean, was not great on the Sox, completely objectively, but overall great career. I'm sure he'll find something great to do with the rest of his life. But hats off to a nice career, Corey Kluber. Here's to you.
I mean, I think people give him a lot of crap for what happened last year, and rightfully so. It was very, very bad. He made nine starts, 15 appearances. ERA was over seven in those games. But people forget, especially if you're a little bit younger, from 2014 to 2018, Corey Kluber was arguably the best pitcher in baseball. And from that time, he had an ERA 2.85, a WHIP of 1.02. He had a strikeout 10.1 K per nine, was only giving up seven hits per nine as well. Won two Cy Youngs, went to the World Series with the Indians, and made three All-Star teams. And he was really good. I just, again, you mentioned Hall of Very Good. He was very, very good, but just didn't do it for long enough to, I think, be considered like a Hall of Fame candidate. But he finishes with over 1,700 career strikeouts. Great, great pitcher. It's just he's older now. He's 37. So,
Can't pitch like that.
sure can't. Sorry, I should talk into my mic when I try to talk. Yeah, sure can't. The last thing here, which we, I'm kind of happy we saved for last year or last, and this came out, I think, a day or two after we released our last episode. But Netflix is about to get a lot better. If you've ever watched Hard Knocks, I know this story's been out for a little bit, so we won't explain too much of it, but the Red Sox are going to be starring like a Hard Knocks style documentary about this 2024 team. They got a camera crew following them around. It's a interesting year to pick the Red Sox, but I think this is going to be a lot of fun to watch, and I think overall just like great for baseball.
Yeah, I mean, There's obviously the good and the bad to it. I think the good is the exposure that it gives, brings baseball a little bit closer to the 21st century in terms of player output and, media output. On the flip side, yeah, it is a little weird that they picked the 2024 Boston Red Sox, who are projected to finish, I assume, last in the American League East and don't really have many marketable stars outside of Raffy. And but at the same time, I think it'll be cool as a Sox fan to get on the inside, and I'm curious to see how it is, if it's just raw, like let's throw a GoPro on Raffy and Casas for the next year. Like I'm all about that. I would I'd watch and listen to a hot mic of Raffy and Casas, 162 games.
Yeah, I think it's gonna be a lot of fun to watch, and I'm just kind of curious to see, like, again, it gives you a good inside perspective of like the clubhouse, who's close with who. Like, these are all fun things as like as a fan that you like to see. So it's gonna be fun to watch. I'm not, does it come out like next year?
Yeah, because they follow. I assume they've started following them now.
Yeah, I think I saw a picture of like a camera crew already down there. So
Yeah.
here's my question for you. Who do you think is going to be like, because people are going to watch this who are not Red Sox fans, probably some who are not baseball fans and
Yeah.
know nothing about the Red Sox. Who do you think is going to be the guy that people get attached to? Like
Dude.
that gains like an insane number of Instagram followers after this come out,
It has to be Casas.
You think it's Casas? I think that's a
Dude,
good pick.
that guy is a walking theater. Like, I'm hoping they put like a National Geographic type camera on him, and it's just like, Tristan Casas walks out to left field 90 minutes before game time. He's not wearing shoes, and he's doing yoga.
I think,
And then he comes to the plate and hits like a 600-foot home run.
yeah, he's,
Wait, I have a question.
yeah.
What happens if someone breaks the red seat record while Netflix is there?
I don't think we see the documentary.
No, I don't think
No,
so either.
I think they're just like, yeah, it's like
What doc? We
mid-season.
were never doing a
The
documentary.
Red Sox like throw up a post, like, like sometimes when something bad, like a tragedy happens, and teams will just post like a graphic where it's like
Yeah.
the team makes a statement. I think it would be something like that, where it's like, we regret to inform our fans that like the Netflix documentary series has been canceled
Yeah.
due to unforeseen circumstances.
Yeah.
We
Unforeseen
apologize.
creative disagreements.
Yeah, something like that. Like scrub the footage. We can't include that. Cut
That.
it. Yeah. I genuinely think that there would be, if someone hit a ball further than the red seat, that there would be like a power surge in Boston. Like it'd just go black and they'd be like, I don't know what happened.
The city sinks into the ocean.
It might, it honestly might. That is
Fenway
honestly the
explodes.
most, that is the most pressing concern, one of the most pressing concerns of Boston right now. It's not the public transportation, it's not any of those. No, and no big issue. It's the red seat. That's definitely
It's the
the
red
big
seat.
problem.
You think it's booby trapped? Someone hits over it and Fenway implodes.
It might. I mean, like I think I told this story, but I went on a tour of Fenway. Like I went on a tour of Fenway, like right after Christmas, I think it was. And like the guy, our tour guide, he was great. I totally forget his name. He was fantastic. But like he was saying that the guy out there who got hit in the seat was like wearing a straw hat and then like couldn't remember or something. I'm like, there's like new details about this every single week. I'm like, what's the story this week, guys? Like,
You think if someone hits over the red seat, then it triggers Ted Williams' head to unfreeze?
yeah, like it's like it could, like Ted Williams is just like automatically next up at bat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They've got like a proxy body ready for him.
Yeah. I don't know. I truly think Rowdy Tellez might have hit one further, but
He absolutely did.
remember, didn't Stack ha or like someone after, because they were like, Stack has glitched out. It was too far.
Yeah.
And someone was like, I think it was 511 feet. And they were like, no.
It was like a foot short, wasn't it? It was like
Oh,
504.
no, I think that was, and actually, I think you're right. I think that was, yeah, maybe that was the one.
Someone was like a foot short.
Yeah. Again, Manny, like just a nuke into the net. Actually, it didn't even go into the net, went onto the mass pike, and they're like,
Yeah.
501.
No.
Like, could you imagine tours out there? They're like, so right now we're in the middle lane of the Mass Pike. This is actually the farthest ball ever hit in Fenway. Like, they can't do that.
No.
Can't do that. That literally ruined half the tour.
Every time I drive through the Pike getting into Boston, I forget how close actually is.
It's right there. Like,
it's
right there.
Straight up right there.
Yeah. No, I'm honestly shocked. I mean, the Green Monster, it's got like the signs and stuff. Like, if you're going to hit it onto the Mass Pike, not only does it have to be a shot, but you got to like kind of thread the needle a little bit too.
Yeah, because you gotta dance around the white poles.
Light poles, you got,
but
like,
I mean, if you get it over those, like, the ads, then you're definitely hitting the Pike.
Yeah, I mean, also too, like, you could get a generous bounce. Like, if you hit it over Lansdowne Street onto the parking garage, I'm pretty sure the parking garage and the Mass Pike are like kind of back to back. You just got to get a good bounce off the concrete and onto the Pike.
I'm saying, like, you flight the ball into the Pike.
Yeah, I mean, that's a nuke, but it could happen. I guess you would have to hit it over everything if it's going that far.
Will Google Maps do that?
Yeah, I think you can. Let's see. Yeah, is there a way to calculate how? Hold on. We're going to do some investigative reporting right now. All right, so, oh, sorry, we paused recording here for a sec to figure this out. So from Google Maps, well, I got to get this so like the dimensions are correct. All right, home plate's right there. If we're talking onto the Mass Pike, I don't think any player's ever hit it on the Mass Pike. We're talking first lane of traffic, 531 feet.
That's a shot.
We're talking the parking garage, though. Again, the parking garage. And I forgot that you've got the commuter rail line right behind there, which separates it. The parking garage, or is that? Yeah, or Cask and Flagon. Top of Cask and Flagon is like 450. You could have hit a bounce off that onto the Pike. But the Red Seat, I don't think the Red Seat is as far as they say it is, honestly.
Definitely not. Definitely not.
I don't know. Yeah, I'm right at home plate because distance to the Monster's 310, distance to the Triangle's 419, which is a foot off. So it's a shot. It's a shot. But I genuinely think pigs will fly before we see someone break the Red Seat record.
Yeah, no one's doing it. And it wasn't like it was, you know, some random Joe Schmo. Like, if, you know, Lars Anderson broke it, like, they'd be waiting for someone to get within 10 feet and they just call it. But it's Ted Williams.
Can't do it.
No, you can't do it.
We've got some questions
from Matt. Hell yeah.
Let me just open these up here. The first question comes in from Matt. He says, what is the most interesting thing you've ever seen in a museum?
Most interesting thing I've ever seen in the museum. I've been to some pretty cool museums.
I'm trying to think what's the best museum I've ever been to. I think I'll keep it baseball related and go with like Cooperstown Hall of Fame.
What's the coolest thing in Cooperstown? I feel like we should adjust the question.
Yeah, coolest thing in Cooperstown. I'm trying to pull up a picture or the pictures I have from when I was there over the summer.
The one thing that sticks out to me when I was there, I saw Tim Lincecum's jersey.
Yeah, I was going to say, cool. That's pretty cool. They have the David Freese jersey from the 2013 or 20, what year was that? 2011 World Series. That's a pretty cool one.
That's
They've
sweet.
Got David Ortiz bat from the 2004 ALCS.
Sick.
I think this was pretty cool. The like book that the Yankees Scott Boras presented to teams when teams were trying to sign A-Rod in free agency.
Oh, that's cool.
And they've also got a full Philly Fanatic like costume.
Yep. I remember that.
Pretty cool. Yeah, lots of cool things. Lots of cool things. That is the only question we've got for Matt this week.
It's a good one.
All right. Let's close out the ninth here. What do you got? We're actually, I mean, we're, let me think here, 43 days away from opening day. We're getting there.
We're like 5 days away from
From
baseball.
real baseball. Yeah. So next time, this is our last episode probably recording with without any game action going on until hopefully October.
You think you can gamble on the Sox Northeastern game?
I think you got to call the number if you're thinking about that.
Come on, man. Don't do me like that.
I don't know if you, I kind of doubt it, because like maybe because it's college versus like pro.
Can bet on college teams. I bet the odds are
No,
fucking awful.
well,
Like,
I
who's
can't
gonna?
even, I like, again, there's, I think spring, if you're betting, no offense to anyone listening, if you're betting spring training games, like, come on, like, you're just, it's literally a roll of the dice. Like, you don't know who's playing. You don't know, like, again, it's not like betting baseball is hard enough as it is. Betting spring training has got to be the most impossible thing ever.
Yeah, it's just a crapshoot. Yeah, I mean, you got, unless you're just throwing darts at the wall with your eyes closed, I mean, you got to know like the 40-man roster plus.
Yeah, I mean, I just don't think you can project like how this guy in single A is going to do against another guy. You're basically betting on like single and double A baseball.
I might bet on a few spring training games just because.
I honestly would be interested to see how you do. You'd probably win more just out of pure luck.
Yeah, I mean, betting on the only team that I ever have success betting on baseball with is the Orioles.
True. Go Birds.
Go Birds. So maybe I'll do that.
Nice. Nice. I don't think if I got anything to close out the ninth with.
I would say my closing out the ninth. I've been the golf season's around the corner. People aren't talking about it. I've been watching a lot of golf. Just got a new driver. I'm stoked about that.
Nice, nice.
Got a new wedge too.
Hell yeah.
Oh yeah. I am
Nice.
stoked to golf.
Nice. What brand? No free ads.
TaylorMade, the three ads.
Nice.
And then I
Nice.
got the a Titleist wedge.
Beautiful. Beautiful.
It's on
Nice, nice,
sale.
nice. My closing out the ninth thoughts. Yeah, I'll keep it pretty simple. I'm just excited for baseball season. Super Bowl's over. Chiefs are champs. And I'm ready to get the spring going, ready to start going to Fenway Park. Hockey season's been fun this year, but baseball's the real ticketed item that I'm ready for. And yeah, it's gonna be here soon enough. And again, two episodes away from episode 150. Stay tuned for that. And if you enjoyed what you listened to, don't forget to follow us on Instagram at GonBridge Podcast and Twitter at GonBridge. Don't forget to subscribe to our episodes on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Stitcher.
Stitcher.
We'll be back next week with episode 149. See ya!